Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about subcultures and how brands influence them and how they influence brands, that sort of symbiotic relationship. I'm your host, Mike Piggott, editor at the Society. For today's pod, I've got a couple of brilliant people from TikTok because subcultures and TikTok, it goes very well together. So I've got Dan Boutil, he's head of social UK EMEA, and Lisa Batty, head of brand strategy EU. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys recently wrote an article for us for our publication Empower, kind of about this topic. So we'll link to that so people can read it too. But I'm going right back to basics right at the start of this for I'm sure most of our listeners and marketers and Marketing Society members know what TikTok is, but let's pretend they don't. And can we just start with a basic of what is it and how does it work?
Sure. Well, in short, we describe TikTok as a social entertainment platform rather than being, you know, purely social media, because the entertainment part is so important. It is a short form entertainment platform. And it's the place where we tell people and brands that they can go to discover and get discovered in a really happy and diverse environment, really. There's no pressure to be perfect. It's just a welcoming place for everyone.
Yeah, I would just add as well, it's entertainment, but definitely entertainment which is fueled by our community. So the way we look at it sometimes is culturally driven entertainment.
I like that term, culturally driven. That's kind of keeping us on theme for the podcast. But yeah, I guess one of the things that I think you guys mentioned in your article for us was how one of the differences that I was aware of, at least, is that the feed is curated by kind of what rather than who you like. So it's more to do with, like you say, sort of topics and things of interest rather than people specifically.
Yeah, so it's all down to our algorithm. So we talk about you don't actually follow people. You know, you can it's hyper tailored our For You page. So it's thanks to an algorithm which is based on a content graph. So on other platforms, for example, if it knows that you like travel and food, it'll show you loads of stuff around travel and food. On TikTok, it gets to learn about the kind of content that you like, that you engage with, that you join in, that you create, and they'll show you a whole breadth of different kind of content all around your likes and things that you've engaged with. And it's multifaceted and it's really tailored. So that's how we get users to stay on there for longer, because it's linked to what they really like and what they resonate with. So we say, like, anyone can go viral, and literally you can. You could post something, have no followers, and overnight suddenly have reached millions of people.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to maybe the question or the theme for the podcast, which is culture. And because this is, our algorithm is so based on your interests and the things you're passionate about, the things you're served are more than often what are most culturally relevant at that time, or capturing people's imaginations in the subculture. So there's just a deep connection between our product and culture at a very, you know, deep foundational level.
So it's kind of, I mean, you know, I sort of I dabbled with TikTok kind of when it first started coming up, and I found that I've used it a lot more during lockdown, I guess, because it's kind of fascinating in terms of a window into people, perhaps. I mean, maybe it's a certain cross-section of people, or kind of those that like to connect with others and perhaps the most exuberant people amongst us. But there's some really interesting little subcultures that you find on there. And I guess that maybe the reason I started getting into it in lockdown was my sort of segue to our publication Empower, and one of the issues that we had last year, one of the most popular issues, was around themed around community and togetherness. And I think in the article that you guys wrote, you talked about that community aspect of TikTok. I mean, how is it that works? I mean, how do you go about bringing people together? Is it through those interest areas or that sort of discovery element, or how does it work?
Yeah, so I think it goes back to the product being so focused on your interests and your passions. What the app is incredible at doing is bringing together complete strangers by the things they care about. You know, it might be the sports teams that they support. It might be the way that they see the world. So again, if you're bringing together like-minded people, the next step in that journey is community building, where people are sharing content, dialogue in our comment section. So again, it's just, again, a really fundamental part of the product itself. And I would also say that whilst it's fundamental to the product, it's also fundamental to our organization. So we're very much a community-driven company. A few small examples, just in the last couple of weeks, I'm in a group which talks a lot about pop punk music. So there's a group of TikTokers that have come together around a shared interest in a music group. And I'm also part of a group of kind of fitness lovers. And on a weekly basis, we share with each other our mileage or our accomplishments. So again, from the inside to the outside, community is definitely central to TikTok's proposition.
Have you found, I mean, I sort of mentioned that I kind of got into things probably or into TikTok a lot more, you know, during COVID. How have you found that's kind of changed? Like how lockdowns, you know, how has lockdown and COVID sort of influenced each other in terms of how TikTok's grown, I suppose?
Yeah, I definitely think you can correlate, or at least it was an accelerant in terms of TikTok's growth. I would say that most people have more potential disposable time. And what they've found with that time is utility within our app, whether that's learning, whether that's community or entertainment. So yeah, I think the general increased disposable time has definitely translated into activity in the app and now long lifetime users.
Mm. I think also as well, the pandemic has, you know, where everyone's in lockdown, people aren't actually physically together. So TikTok has really filled that gap, and it's brought, it's given people an opportunity to come together, either with like-minded people in their, you know, around communities, around their shared passions, or their more bizarre subcultures, or their smaller groups that they're into, but also families, you know, bringing families together to co-create, doing things they can join in with together. You remember the early lockdown, you know, it was Zoom quizzes and God, what can we do? And then it just sort of became the norm. And I think TikTok has really enabled people to, of all ages, which is why we say it's more of a mindset than an age thing. You know, it's enabled people to come together and just have fun, really, and not like, you know, kind of, it's sort of, we always say it's a very joyful and accepting environment. And I think in the current climate, that's totally what people are looking for. You know, they just want a bit of time to let go and enjoy themselves and just mess around and forget all of the stuff that they're worrying about.
Yeah, I mean, that joy aspect is quite interesting, because I think some of the other platforms that are out there that connect people, you know, they have great points about them, but they also, there's also a lot of kind of toxicity out there. And I feel that that's less on TikTok. I guess when you mentioned sort of age aspect and just anyone being on the platform, that's kind of interesting too, because I think when TikTok first turned up, I mean, everyone's probably like, oh, it's just for young people, or marketers perhaps and brands maybe getting a little bit over obsessed with Gen Z and saying, oh, it's a great new place for Gen Z. But I don't know. I mean, what's the kind of split of, did you guys have much in the way of demographics and kind of who's on the platform? Because I always get the impression that it's not just young people on it.
No, absolutely not. And we try and steer away from talking about demographics, really, because it really is a mindset thing. It's quite age agnostic, and it's all about the mindset, which sort of trumps the generation. So we've got like big personalities and characters and creators from all ages. So we've got Grandpa Joe, who's in his 80s, I think. Mum Talk, you know, that's a big area, sort of mums getting involved. And the 25 plus demographic is our fastest growing. So we talk about, we call it Gen T as opposed to Gen Z. It's Generation TikTok. And it's all about belonging in a community. And it's an inclusive platform where we encourage people to be authentic, to be themselves, to find a community that, you know, accepts them and does the same. And nothing is too niche, really. You know, there's I'm sure Dan will dig deeper into this, but there is, you can find any type of passion or person on there. In fact, I was talking to someone the other day. I was talking to Graham Fink, the great creative guy, and he's into, God, I can't pronounce it now, the thing where you see faces in everything. I think it's called Pallia.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember.
Pareidolia. And there's even, you look at that on TikTok, there's tons of stuff. You know, there's nothing that's not on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess that whole thing of, you know, finding, I suppose, finding your tribe a little bit. One of the things I wanted to touch on was the sort of mass exodus from Tumblr when they started to clamp down on content there. And it hit sort of artistic communities and creators, but also like LGBTQ plus community pretty heavily. But I'm sort of starting to see perhaps their rise on TikTok. They're sort of rising from the ashes, or perhaps they've found a home there where once they left Tumblr. I was just curious kind of what sort of trends you guys are sort of seeing on TikTok in terms of, you know, these sort of subcultures rising up.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, long live Tumblr. Tumblr set the foundation for a lot of great platforms and communities afterwards. And I think what connects us to Tumblr is that fandom and community aspect. Tumblr was one of the first places, and I would include MySpace in this, where you could go online, be connected to like-minded people and really express yourselves and feel safe. And that's exactly the type of environment that we're trying to build within TikTok. As a result of that, we found some of these kind of in the past, potentially more internet early adopter communities and subcultures finding their place on the TikTok app. I've already mentioned emo music, anime, K-pop. Yeah, we just have a very vibrant, broad range of communities, which is incredible to see.
Yeah, I think in the article that you wrote for us, you guys mentioned cottagecore, EduTok, and SkinTok as well, stuff around skincare. I think fitness you already mentioned as well, being and mums of TikTok being quite big ones.
There are loads. You know, this has been a big education for us as well in the brand strategy team, like digging it into the background of these subcultures and finding out who they are. Mm-hmm. And we think that the reason that TikTok is such a great hub for these subcultures is firstly the welcoming nature that we've talked about, and our creative tools, and the fact that people can very easily connect and discover new subcultures, because you're not limited to your little social bubble or your echo chamber, you know, like other platforms that run on a social graph. You'll be exposed to new things. So we've got a bit of information. There's EduTok, which is, you know, quick learning, SkinTok, as you said, Mums of TikTok is a big one. Cottagecore, I'd never heard of. WitchTok is one that was becoming quite popular, which is sort of spells and dark academia and light academia. You know,
okay.
I just can't
think interesting
of anything you couldn't find on there.
I mean, so how does it work for you guys then? Are you trying to, is it like trying to force the ocean? Like if you're like sort of there going, okay, we think this is going to be a thing, or this is a trend in going in this direction, or is it literally more you just sort of watching stuff happen and being like, wow, we didn't expect that. That's a trend that we didn't see coming.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of incredible things happen. I'll give you some examples. So recently, and if you didn't see this, I'm not sure where you've been in the UK, but sea shanties took over culture. And that actually started with one of our Scottish creators who, you know, was based in Scotland. He had an incredible voice, came across the old maritime, ancient music of shanty and decided to sing one. And it just set off a chain reaction of other people duetting with him, jumping onto the chain, remixing it and interpreting it. And then it just broke out of TikTok. You know, we started seeing shanty music in the viral music charts. We started seeing press interest, you know, and then he was on Match of the Day, you know. So these trends, they may start niche, but then they just have the potential to capture imagination and go much further. Similarly, we're seeing a bit of a resurgence of pop punk music. So started in early 90s, early 2000s. And now what's really interesting, the music's coming back, and some of these artists from 20 years ago, their songs, which were really pertinent for one generation, are A, making a comeback for that generation. So there's an element of nostalgia, but at the same time, they're being exposed to a new audience, and the new audience is remixing them, attaching them to memes and kind of experiencing them for the first time. So it's, you know, like I said at the very start, we're just so connected to culture. It's so unpredictable. And what we see is just the product of just the creativity of our community coming to life on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think the sea shanty ones was interesting, and I'm going with the thing that pirates are never out of fashion. Basically, pirates and Vikings are always going to be there, but maybe that's probably just me. But yeah, I know I follow a lot of rappers and battle rappers, and they started picking up the sea shanty and basically sea shanty singing and then rapping in between. Wow. Which is a really interesting concept. But yeah, I was enjoying that. I kind of want to move on to how brands fit into this, because I mean, obviously sea shanties is a thing. Before that, I guess the thing that a lot of people probably be aware of is the Ocean Spray guy. For those not in the know, guy is skating to work, drinking Ocean Spray. It was kind of that free sort of abandon escapism, and it was all very naturalistic. And then everybody started copying him. And I think because he was drinking Ocean Spray sent him a truck or something, I don't know, so he could drive to work.
Yeah, his truck had broken down. So he was sort of thinking, oh, well, hey ho, got on his skateboard, drinking his Ocean Spray to go and get some more fuel from the garage. And it just totally caught fire because of the way it was. And then obviously Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac dumped on it. The song Dreams went back into the charts after 30 odd years. Ocean Spray bought him a new truck because they were so grateful that he'd made the product sell out in all the stores. It was just a phenomenal story. And we've got loads of examples of those where stuff is selling out because of these. And I know you're going to say, like, oh, how do brands have a viral hit and how do they get their product to sell out? And that's,
well, I was going to say more the opposite of kind of, oh, you know, they can't force an Ocean Spray into existence. That's the point. So what's the better way for them to sort of add value to these subcultures? Well, how would you recommend they go about doing it?
Well, firstly, I think I love the fact that, you know, we're talking about TikTok being at the heart of culture. And I think anybody in marketing or advertising should have the app on their phone, even if they're not creating content, just to sort of see, because you can really, it's a really good resource. As an ex-planner, I would always use something like TikTok to sort of find out kind of what's happening and what sort of different audiences are doing. And this is what we'd say to brands, is to, you know, understand what your audience are doing. That will lead to, you know, you creating a more personalized campaign, which will further resonate with them. And also, like, you know, connect via your shared values. So find out who the prominent creators are within those subcultures. See what brands are already associated with it. Listen to the sort of music they're using, and, you know, and sort of follow and join in with the right trends, and don't try and force yourself on it. And we do have this line, which is don't make ads, make TikToks, which is not to say, you know, you have to overthink it. It's just like, just go with it and be part of the kind of the scene, and don't make it feel like you're selling to them.
Yeah, is it feels like maybe like the kind of a bit of a wild west kind of vibe, as in like it's a bit rough and ready, and it's not about doing everything in a polished, signed off way, but more just that real kind of authentic human way of just playing and experimenting and being silly. I think that feels like it fits.
I'm quite old, of the sort of what it must have been like in the glory days of advertising in the 70s and the 80s. You know, you had those big agencies like CDP who were putting out phenomenal work, or someone like BMP and the Smash Martians. People might have to Google that, but one of the probably the most well-remembered and well-loved ads ever. That was done kind of not based on any kind of research or any kind of audience kind of testing. It was just, this is a great idea, it's going to entertain people, let's put it out. And that's very much what I feel TikTok is. You know, let's put something out that we know is going to entertain and people will like it. And if they like it, they will share it, they'll join in with it, you know, and they'll talk about it. And I think that's it. And it's really easy. You know, we give everyone all the tools they need and all the techniques. They can work with creators if they want to. And people don't judge it. You know, it's not like a really judgy atmosphere. So if they like it, they'll like it.
Do you guys have any examples of, I don't know, weird and wonderful ways that brands have been using the platform that's surprised you perhaps in the last year or so?
I don't know about weird and wonderful, but just one example that springs to mind for me is with M&S. You know, they're famous for their sort of food porn ads. And they obviously looked at that and went, you know, this is great for television. It's great for glossy press ads. Is it going to work on TikTok? It's probably not the right tone of voice. So they have worked with one of our creators, and they've just reimagined. It's the same essence, it's the same idea, but what they've done is kind of very cleverly said to the creators, look, what would you do? What would your audience like? So one of our creators has done the voiceovers. She's I can't remember her name, but she always sort of speaks to herself as if she's two different people. So that they've got her doing the voiceover about this great content and her actually trying to eat and going, will you shut up? It's really, really great way of a kind of a traditional, I guess, advertiser really embracing it and getting behind the right language and the right style and not being too precious.
Yeah, that does feel like the kind of almost the only way that they can do things. Because I did a podcast recently where we were talking about gaming and how brands can get closer to gamers, and it's very much the same kind of thing. Like gamers are going to sniff out, you know, inauthentic brands really quickly if they're trying to, you know, muscle into the conversation. Mm. It's a very protected kind of space, and it sort of feels the same with TikTok. Really, like you can't just wade in and be like, as a brand, and be like, hey guys, buy our stuff. And it just, you know, or a glossy ad, like you say, it's just not going to work. I suppose I'm kind of curious about, does it feel like a sort of, like you say, going back to the ads of a golden age, that kind of like a very much a purely creative space where brands can perhaps test and learn and play around and just try things and perhaps not worry so much about, I don't know, brand guidelines or anything?
I think there is that, but there's also the opportunity to, you know, it's when we say test and learn, the learn bit is probably the most important. We're still quite a new platform, you know, a couple of years old, but we are generating huge amounts of campaigns. We're looking through all the data and we are building a picture, a sort of performance story around what works and what does work. So what does and doesn't work. So we can advise brands on, you know, better and better ways to be targeted. You know, we talk about it being a full funnel solution so they can have their great creative big kind of, you know, hashtag challenge or a great kind of campaign that they do, the golden age style, but also there's the kind of always on element. We can talk to them about performance and how that can deliver against those metrics as well. Mm.
Just going back to what Lisa said a few questions ago about everybody just having the app to kind of dive in and look at culture. The other thing I'd say is that we have the world's most creative people on the app, our creators. And every advertiser, every brand person should be looking at how they create stories and the stories they tell and the creative ways they do it. It's just fantastic inspiration and access to creativity that you can get just from looking at the app.
Yeah. So even if you don't do anything on the app as a brand, like it's a great research tool, looking at people and sort of working out how people are being people, I suppose. I wanted to touch on something that I saw a week or two ago now. So the British style magazine, The Face, which started in the 80s, some of us might remember, and obviously it's now digital. But they recently, I spotted on LinkedIn that they've recently launched a TikTok talent agency, and I was kind of curious what your thoughts were. Is that the way things are going? Where, like, I don't know, in order to understand TikTok, people are going to start creating TikTok specific agencies to do it. And I don't know, I felt The Face was quite an interesting, you know, sort of organization to do that. I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
I mean, yeah, great. I love The Face. You know, for me, it was like, oh my God, it's back. And they've sort of pivoted into what's, they've kept abreast of what's fashionable, which is what they always did. Especially when we talk about creators as well, rather than influencers, which I think is an important point of difference to make. But I spoke to our creator team. We have an in-house team that work and manage these relationships, and they're saying that they're seeing an influx of all of these new agencies with new talent, which is really exciting. But also they're saying that it's exciting to see a lot more of the established sort of traditional talent agencies take on what we'd call TikTok talent. So because they're so diversified in their approach, not just actually in what they create, but their approach to being creators, it's good to see them being, you know, recognized as actual talent. But for us, you know, we think it's this whole representation piece is great to see because it regulates the industry. And also it hopefully opens up TikTok further to people who previously weren't sure as how best to work with creators, you know, because it's something we do offer as a service, but there's also a way you can self-serve on our creator marketplace and work with people yourselves, or, you know, clients might have talent that they work with. So how do they get them involved? So it's, it's great news for us. And I think we'll see more of it.
Mm. Yeah, I just thought it was particularly interesting, like you say, The Face always kind of being on the cultural pulse. And yeah. I was just like, oh, okay, TikTok talent agency, okay, nice. I guess we're drawing to a close of our time, but I just wanted to perhaps round up with a couple of things. One being, where do you guys sort of see the evolution of the platform? Is it sort of this year, you know, this year and next year? Like, is it just continuing to grow in much the same way and just watching these sort of subcultures evolve? Or is it like you say, rise of all these talent agencies? I mean, I'm just curious what the next stage is for TikTok.
No, well, I think a lot more of the same. You know, it's important to remember we're just a two-year-old brand at this stage, and we still have a lot of runway ahead of us, a lot of new users to experience the platform for the first time. So if anything, I can see more growth, more people experiencing and loving the TikTok experience. And then kind of building on the last question, all of these incredibly creative people that are using our platform being discovered, finding attention, and then hopefully making a living out of their creativity as well.
Yeah, sounds good. I think anything that backs creative people and helps fuel culture has got to be a good thing in my book. There needs to be more of that.
I mean, given that the app started, you know, people originally were saying, oh, it's kind of lip syncing and dancing and doing, you know, kind of copying dances. Moved on so much more than that. You know, we've talked about it in this podcast about all the different subcultures. It's given people a platform for things around like Black Lives Matter, the whole Me Too thing. You know, we've talked about LGBTQ plus audiences. It can just only grow and grow and grow and sort of evolve, be bigger and even better.
So I guess on a final point, and if there are sort of brands out there that are kind of, you know, flirting with the idea, they haven't given it a go yet, but what would you sort of say to them? What would be your sort of tip in terms of the best way that they can approach doing stuff on TikTok?
Firstly, I'd say download it and spend some time on there, you know, because it's the best way to see what's trending, what people are reacting to, what your audience is talking about, all in real time. And then just the other thing is to not try too hard and don't be afraid to get it wrong. Just be authentic. And if it doesn't work, you know, move on and try something different. People won't judge you.
Yeah, just a big plus one on what Lisa said at the end. People won't judge. It's not a feed that you create over time. This is a platform where you have the chance to experiment, be creative and see what works over time.
Sounds good. Well, sounds a great point on which to end. So I just want to say thank you to both of you for coming on the Marketing Society podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.